the forecast, I believe. It's 10:30 compared to the February forecast. And also, it applies to the ADMs, average daily membership. What I thought would be a truer picture for you is what happens in reality, in real dollars, from one biennium or one year to the next, from the impacts of this bill, the way in which these formulas are calculated. And that is not by average daily membership, but by pupil units. Now, one of the other vagaries of education funding is that a pupil is not a pupil at sometimes, because we weight them, the value of them at each level. For example, in kindergarten, we weight a student at 0.612. In grade 1 through 3, we weight them 1.115. So in other words, they get more than one of the basic funding formula, the 5124. 4 through 6 is 1.06, and grades 7 to 12 is 1.3. So districts will vary. They may have an influx of younger children coming in and maybe losing ground at the high school level. It may be the other way around. So in terms of the reality of what school districts are receiving, the spreadsheet that I have given you shows that. We have taken referendum out because referendum can, depending on if a new referendum is passed, it can skew one district higher than another. This gives you reality in terms of what this bill does for your district based on the pupil, the weighted pupil units. And so if you look through there, you don't see nearly as much red. Yes, there are a few. Sometimes that's just not possible to do anything. I don't know that we've ever done that here that hasn't had some implications one way or another. So I would invite you to look at that, that run, and check out how your districts are doing. As compared with the way of looking at with the forecast is just that. It's the forecast of how much would be spent. It's not something that is acted on and passed into law. And so I don't think that that is the way that we should be, in fact, measuring what would, in fact, be happening. We pay, and the districts exist, with the money that we approve in our actions here in the legislative chamber, and ultimately get signed into law.
Further discussion on Senate File 1030. Senator Goodwin.
Madam Chair, I have an amendment here. It's the A201201.
Senator Goodwin offers the A201 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Goodwin moves to amend Senate File 1030 as follows. Page 19, delete Section 27. This is the A201 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Goodwin.
Madam President, this amendment deletes those sections in the bill that interfere with the collective bargaining process. I think is within the outside of the domain of the legislature to deal with collective bargaining issues. They do absolutely nothing to balance our state budget by interfering in local control, and those school boards and administrations should have the ability and the power to do these things within the bargaining and the negotiations process. I think it's a dangerous territory for us to get into, and we should stay out of it. So I would like your support on this, and I would like a roll call.
Roll call has been requested. Further discussion on the A201 amendment. Senator Olson.
Well, Madam President, and Senator Goodwin, outside of the fact that the legislature gave the power to collective bargaining, I guess it apparently is out of the purview of the legislature.
Further discussion on the A201 amendment. A roll call has been requested on the A201. Secretary will take the roll. All those senators having voted, Secretary will close the roll. There being 23 ayes and 37 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 1030. Secretary will give the bill, Senate File 1030, its third reading.
Senate File 1030, a bill for an act relating to education. Third reading.
Further discussion on Senate File 1030. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam President. First of all, let me thank Senator Olson for putting together this bill, but because I know how hard it is to put bills together when you're chairman of a committee, especially one as comprehensive as this. But members, here we go again. Yesterday, it was public employees and poor people's health care. Today it's teachers. This attack on teachers has been going on since the Carlson administration and has continued through the Ventura and Pawlenty administration. And today, this bill really hammers teachers. You know, I handed out an article before about a student that had a teacher in the Hibbing School District, and it tells about her experience and the ways that teachers used to be able to teach when teachers didn't have to teach to the test but could actually teach creatively in the classroom. Members, teaching is a noble profession. In fact, after parents, teachers are probably the people who make the most significant impact and impression on students' lives. The discussion this legislative session has been on an attack on teachers, and this bill contains some egregious provisions that will not help enhance quality education in Minnesota. With 60% of our school teachers over the age of 40, we need to find ways to entice young people into the profession and not design reasons for them to either turn away or leave the classrooms. Remember, yesterday I read the salary freeze provision in the state government bill Here's the salary freeze provision in the education bill. After June 30th, 2013, a school district or charter school must not increase the salary or wages for any employee. This section prohibits any increase, including, but not limited to, across-the-board increases, cost of living adjustments, increases based on longevity, increases as a result of step and lane changes, increases in the form of lump sum payments, increases in employer contributions to deferred compensation plans, or any pay grade adjustment of any kind. Basically speaking, members, this bill eliminates collective bargaining. It sends a chilling message that getting more education isn't worth it. It tells teachers that their experience doesn't count, and sends another terrible message to any new prospective teacher: don't become a teacher, because you'll never get a raise. You'll never be appreciated. Teachers' starting pays in Minnesota are in less than $30,000, and it takes 20 years for teachers to reach their maximum salary potential. But how can we entice young people into the profession that makes it hard for them to make a decent living that will allow them to buy a home and raise a family, when this bill doesn't even allow them to get a raise and get up to their maximum potential? You know, I believe that the overwhelming majority of Minnesota teachers are quality professionals who have the best interests of our children at heart, and to constantly bash them and to find ways of making our children more difficult is wrong and smacks of many of the news stories coming out of Wisconsin. This bill contains anti-educator provisions that freeze wages, takes away staff development dollars, curtail collective bargaining and contract rights, and gives school boards and board salary and job hiring and firing authority under the teacher quality. The bill also sets up controversial teacher evaluation system that ties teachers' salaries to student scores at a time when we do not have proper assessment tools to make this obtainable. The provision will require that more tests be developed and administered to test-weary students. This definitely needs more discussion. And how many tests do our kids really have to take? You know, I've been hearing a lot of talk about income tax increases as being really bad and will actually kill the economy in Minnesota. Yet if you go back 12 or 13 years, when our income taxes were higher on the low, middle, and higher income brackets, we didn't have K-12 funding problems like we have today. In fact, generally speaking, we were able to give increases to our K-12 system. Our college tuition was actually affordable. And in fact, our level of college funding today is at the 1998 level. Back then, we didn't have to make the shifts in the K-12 funding that we're doing now, and we didn't run budget deficits virtually every biennium. Teachers and state employees were actually able to get a raise and be rewarded for their work. And then we lowered taxes. We lowered taxes, and that blew a $2 billion hole in the budget. Since then, we've had deficit after deficit. K-12 funding has been flat at best, and we've had to delay payments to school districts year after year, costing our districts money. Our higher education system has been forced to double tuition. Property taxes have gone up over $3 billion in the last 8 years. And our teachers and our public employees have been blamed and have been under attack and forced to not take any raises year after year. In the meantime, the price of government has dropped to historic lows from almost 19% to just over 15%. And yet when the governor does the right thing by trying to restore that lost funding by means of a progressive income tax on the top 5% wage earners, your side of the aisle claims foul. Our multimillionaires can't afford to pay one more dollar in taxes. They'll leave. It'll ruin their luxurious style of living. So what's your solution? Make public employees and teachers who make $40,000 pay upwards of $12,000 each to solve the budget deficit, and a deficit that is not their making, or deny health care to the poor. It's outrageous. Governor Dayton's plan will restore badly needed revenue, and yes, we do have a revenue problem, and yes, someone needs to answer the question, why can public employees and teachers making $40,000 afford to contribute $12,000 of their income to solve the budget deficit, but multimillionaires can't pay one penny to help out. Finally, members, working hand in hand with our teachers and helping boost morale in our schools and giving our educators a voice in what happens in their classrooms is essential if we are to provide quality education for all our children. We need to end the attack on our teachers, member, and we need to not pass this bill. I don't believe the governor is going to sign this bill. We're going to go back to step one after today.
Further discussion on Senate File 1030. Seeing none, the secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1030.
Madam President?
Senator Rest.
I move those not voting be excused from voting.
Senator Rest, there are a few people that are coming in yet. All those senators having voted, the secretary will close the roll. There being 36 ayes and 25 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Where'd she go? Senator Koch. Senator Koch, I believe you would like to make a motion to lay this bill on the table. Senator Koch.
What's the number? Madam President, the number on the transportation bill?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Madam President, I move to lay Senate File 1030 on the table.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. On that motion... Senator Pogemiller.
Madam President, would the majority leader yield?
Senator Pogemiller, you are aware that it is non-debatable.
It's a...
To lay on the table.
Yes, I was just going to ask what the purpose... This is related to the germaneness issue, ultimately.
We will wait on that, Senator Pogemiller. Thank you, because we're in the middle of a motion to lay on the table.
I was just curious why it was being laid on the table.
I believe so. It is so that it can be matched up with a House file.
Does it need to be a House file, Madam President? That was my question.
I believe so, yes.
Senator Pogemiller, the House file had already passed, and so we would put our language. We moved earlier to give the House file a second reading.
Senator Pogemiller.
I think that what I was looking for is it needs to be a House file. because of a particular reason. Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Koch renews her motion to lay Senate File 1030 on the table. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. We have several excuses. Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session. Senator Stump from 9 o'clock to 10:30. Senator Rosen from 9 o'clock to 10:30. Senator Latz from 11 to 11:30 a.m. and 11:40 to 12:05 p.m. Senator Thompson from 11:20 to 11:40. Senator Gimsey from 11:50 to 12:50. Senator Scheid from 1 p.m. till the end of session. Senator Hand from 1:10 p.m. until the end of session. Senator Latz from 1:10 p.m. until the end of session. Senator Sharon from 1:45 to 2:10 p.m. Senator Dibble from 1:55 till the end of session. And Senator Reinert from 2 o'clock till the end of session. Without objection, those members will be excused. Further announcements of Senate interest? Senator Metzen.
Madam President and members, we just want to wish Senator Tomasoni good luck tomorrow. He's going in for hip surgery in the morning, and good luck to you, David.
Thank you, Senator Metzen. Further announcements of Senate interest? Senator Rest.
Madam President, I would just like to remind people that they have received their a memo from the Legislative Audit Commission to suggest evaluation suggestions to the subcommittee on topic selection, and we're asking for those to be in as quickly as possible, and the deadline is April 4th, and you can either turn them in to Senator Reinert or Senator Roebling or me or to the legislative auditor.
Further announcements of Senate interest. Senator Koch.
Madam President and members, Republicans, we will be caucusing at 2:30, so immediately following in room 107. And then, Madam President, I would move that we'll adjourn until Monday, April 4th at 10 a.m.
Senator Koch moves we adjourn until Monday, April 4th at 10 a.m. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are adjourned. My office.